mentored by some of the best minds in entrepreneurship in the world, then you're listening to the right podcast, Ditch Digger CEO. We're going to be interviewing CEOs and founders who will be telling their amazing rags-to-riches stories. These entrepreneurs who dominate the industries they serve will be sharing the secrets to their success. We'll be talking to millionaires and billionaires, many who started with nothing. You're going to be mentored with golden nuggets of shared experiences from my guest, whose time is worth thousands and even tens of thousands of dollars per hour. I started in the paving business right out of high school, and with no college education, mentorship has been my education of choice. I started over 25 companies in the last 20 years, have generated over $1.5 billion in revenues. My guarantee is this. If you listen to Ditch Digger CEO and you want to be more successful, you will become more successful. The secrets of my success and for many of the world's greatest business leaders will be revealed. Let Ditch Digger CEO mentor you.
Welcome today to Ditch Digger CEO. I'm here with my producer, Chris Broadhead, and we've got an awesome guest today, Fardad Sabatian. Fardad, welcome to Ditch Digger CEO. We're really excited to have you today.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So, Fardad, you know, we've learned a little bit about you by just kind of looking you up. Chris heard some great things about you, and we're proud to have you on our podcast. I mean, our goal is to interview people that are, you know, innovative, that are building a business to serve their customers better than anybody else in the world. And when I see the stuff you're doing, boy, I don't know anybody doing the stuff you're doing at the level you are. So you're doing amazing things to serve your market and the world, like not many people that we know. So we're excited to go forward and talk to you about your history and all that. So what we'd like to do, Fardad, is it really start with you know, kind of your upbringing and where you're from, and you know, kind of where your core values came from, where this mind of entrepreneurship came from, and innovation that you have, and then kind of talk about your business and you know what you do, customers you serve, and you know who you are today and where you're going to be 10 years from now, right? And where the industry is going to be 10 years from now. So that's kind of a summary of what we want to get out of this. If you're good with that,
I'm good with it.
awesome. So if you could start with kind of your upbringing, you know, where you grew up, your kind of your picture of your family, your parents, and what that looked like, and maybe a couple of people around you that inspired you.
Excellent. Well, it's been quite a journey for me from where I was 30 years ago and where I'm today. Today I'm just pretty standard location. I'm based in New York City, married. Two kids living in Brooklyn, and enjoying really an amazing lifestyle when it comes to a good harmony between work, personal, you know, family all together. But it's been quite a long journey, as I said, to come here. I was born and raised in Tehran, in Iran. I was 6 years old when the Iranian Revolution happened, and it was quite a challenging time for me growing up in Iran, witnessing the Iran-Iraq war for 8 years, and having my dad serving in the military, defending the country, and just getting letters from him once every 40 days or so until I was a teenager. And at that time, I was quite obsessed about what's going on in the other part of the world and how much I am isolated as a teenager and why my opportunities are so limited when it comes to access to knowledge, access to information, access to a better communication with the rest of the world. But of course, this really helped me to be who I am, which being very persistent and very ambitious and very passionate about whatever I pick to do during my adult life. So I went through the whole university entrance process in Iran, the alternative, not getting into university, was going to military service, which was not a good option for me. Just to give you a kind of a perspective of how competitive it is going to university in Iran versus the rest of the world. Usually every year there is exam that probably 2-3 million recent high school graduates, they participate, and there is about 70,000 seats across all the universities in the country. And
Let's say it again. 2-3 million apply, and there's about 70,000 people that get a spot.
They get a spot. So it's somehow opposite. It's very hard to get in. It's easier to graduate. Most universities in the Western world is easier to get in compared to being able to graduate, right? So, you kind of study really hard to get into universities, right? And that was the case. I got into engineering school to study electrical engineering. So for me, that was kind of a big relief to be able to get to university and really escape the 2-year mandatory military service. But at that time, I started doing my very first kind of entrepreneurship experience with three of other my classmates. I was 19 years old. We started a very first company that was automation for industries, manufacturing industries within food and agriculture. And I recall my very first project was the very known brand for making mayonnaise and ketchup to be able to automate the production. And that business kind of financed my tuitions and really set me up for being able to move to California in my mid-20s to San Francisco Bay Area.
So manufacturing was a packaging of mayonnaise and ketchup, Fardad, or what was that?
Yeah, it was mainly building electronic devices to monitor the temperature, the speed, the humidity throughout the production. So think about like a temperature pressure monitoring system, very basic stuff, but we're talking about 30 years ago.
Yeah. And how did you get into that? How did that come about? Young guy, you were like 19, you said? 19, 20?
Yes. Yeah. So it was mainly through a relative was working in the factory and was just telling me about the problem that they're having as far as these mixers for eggs to make mayonnaise. If they go beyond a specific speed, the mayonnaise is not going to turn out to be good. So we can build a thing for you to monitor the speed of the motor, right? And that kind of started like the idea of building this speedometer for mixing eggs.
That's pretty cool. And so from that, you ended up solving other problems for them as well.
Yeah. So when I moved to US, my dream, of course, I really noticed throughout my teenage life the importance of language and communication. Again, going back to that, teenage time, every time I listened to radio or TV, it was something about Security Council, about the new resolution that they're going to approve or not approve that is going to bring peace to Iran or put more sanctions on Iran. So for me, the Security Council was like the ultimate power when it comes to controlling my life or my destiny, right? So my goal was, what can I do to really be part of this organization? So I started My first company called Media Vision back in 2002 was providing technology and equipment for large organizations, government institutions, wherever public facing kind of a chambers that people, they needed to vote, to speak different languages. So this business grown globally from San Francisco to open offices in Washington, D.C., in New York, in Paris, in Geneva, where we were very fortunate to be the technology partner for organizations such as World Bank, IMF, the UN, European institutions. And what brought me to New York was back in 2011, when my company got awarded to renovate the UN. And of course, Security Council was part of that project. So everything you see on TV today, out of the, you know, from voting, from language interpretation, how people speak and stream and communicate, is really what brought me to New York from California.
That's interesting. To think that you had this vision of the only way you're going to, you know, make a difference or impact is to somehow have something to do with this Security Council is a pretty cool thing, that you had somehow a vision of somehow you want to be part of that, right? Part of solving problems and making it, you know, making an impact there is pretty incredible. Eventually, not that long later, you're probably what, in your mid-20s at this point?
No, I was in my 30s. When I started the company.
Yeah, when you started Media Vision and you were involved in the Security Council.
Yeah, I was in my late 30s, actually, when I got into UN. But when I started the company, I was in late 20s.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool. You had that kind of a vision that that's something you have to do someday to make a difference, and you're there, right?
Yeah.
I love it.
But of course, now I know what the UN, I know better about the UN and how sometimes inefficient they could be and sometimes very effective they could be, right?
So. Right. They definitely make an impact. Sometimes, you know, negative, sometimes positive, right? But, you know, they're
exactly.
Definitely make an impact. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so then, yeah, so early 2000s, Media Vision, and then later on, really got into some great deals with that company. Now, how long do you own that company? Do you still own it?
20 years, for 20 years. And I exited that company back in actually a year and a half ago, early 2022. I sold the company, and it was quite an experience for me, going from, you know, a company that you build over 20 years, from like a brick by brick over time, like with no external capital, with no kind of a partners, with no co-founders, and kind of a grow it to pretty much a global operation with a lot of exciting partners, customers. And then next day, you're not the owner anymore. So.
Yeah. But were you the operating CEO though at the time you sold, or were you like more of a chairman, or what was your role?
So I was operating CEO until 2019, because I had already started my other company, Kudo, which I am now the operating CEO, and pretty much 100% of my focus there. I already started the company then. And in 2019, I pretty much transitioned out of Media Vision and became fully focused on Kudo. And I was very fortunate that my wife, Annabelle, had already been in the company Media Vision for about 10 years. And she took even a more leading role at the company, and really ran the business until our exit in 2022.
Wow. Okay. So, these are rags to riches stories we talk about, right? Starting with nothing and building to be top 1% in your industry. You know, that's kind of the conversations we have often. We love it because we want people to know it. In America, the sky is the limit. You can start with nothing, with a vision and work ethic and build something spectacular, right? And so what you started basically with nothing. What was your initial investment that you made to start Media Vision? And then what were the revenues when you sold in 2022?
So not only you can start with nothing, I can also add to that. When I moved to US, it was right after 9/11. And that's when I started the company. For somebody from the Middle East, I'm still speaking English with a thick accent, right? Being from the Middle East and being able to really build a business that captures more than 50% of the market share over time without any external capital is really, I think, is only possible in this country. And that's really what I admire about the US, right? So just going back, I had a very challenging time starting the company because first of all, I didn't have credit with the banks. So I had two jobs, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. I was working on the business. 3 p.m. I was assistant store manager for a retailer called Forever 21 to work from 3 p.m. to closing shift to be able to just meet the ends, you know. And I had maybe 7,000-8,000 balance on my credit card at that time. And that's kind of a really high financed my business. When I won the UN contract back in 2011, the contract was at that time around $11 million. And my annual revenue for the business on that year was around $3 million. So think about winning a contract that is three times or more of your annual revenue, right?
Over three and a half times, over 350% of your annual revenues the year before.
Exactly. So kind of course, it was over a couple of years to complete that. How you can really finance this, how you can really make sure that failure is not an option in execution, because that would pretty much be a recipe for disaster ruin the business. So kind of that's the decision I took to come to New York myself to really manage the project.
Forever 21, you made some big bucks there. How much did they pay you per hour?
It was $8.75 an hour.
Again, I love it because, you know, I tell the story. I worked in some of my best experiences have been working along with immigrants from all over the world. I worked in a factory when I was in the winter time after I graduated high school. I worked in the factory because I could only do in the warm months in Chicago, paving driveways and seal coating driveways. Anyway, so I worked in a factory so I wouldn't dig into my savings. And it was $4.25 an hour I made. Two winters in a row. I think I made $4.50 or something like that the next winter. But I worked next to immigrants from all over the world, and they had big smiles on their face, like you and I have right now, right? Yeah. They're so excited to be in this great country, and they had all these dreams and these ambitions of starting a business. And I followed up with many of those people 4 or 5 years after I didn't work there anymore, and they were doing exactly what they said they were going to do. They saved, 90% of what they made. They saved. They lived with many, many people from their communities from back home, and it was amazing to see what they did with their lives in many cases, right? And then we had other spoiled Americans that worked that same factory. They were grouchy, they were mean, they were complaining that they're working for minimum wage, whatever, right? And you knew that those people did not have the same chance that those people, my friends I met from Poland and Mexico and all over the world. I knew that they were going to have amazing opportunities in this great country, but what it gave me was even more confidence that I spoke this language well, right? I'm from this culture, and it gave me this inspiration that I'm going to be very successful because I've got a leg up on all these immigrants. I've got to be. If I'm not successful, I'm an embarrassment, right? Yeah. And so I can imagine you at $8.75 an hour, happy as can be, being there, knowing you had this vision of your business growing, right? And that $8.75 was just enough, so you didn't have to dip into savings, right?
Exactly.
That's awesome. And you got some nice looking clothes out of the deal, right? You're a pretty good dresser. You're a pretty good dresser still today because of it.
No, definitely. You want to keep the appearance ready when you're dealing with business negotiations, right? So.
Okay. So again, when you sold that, okay, so you started with, like you're saying, nothing or less than nothing. Knowing that you're going to have to work to finance everything you're doing, did you take on partners and raise equity at all?
No, never had external capital or partners at that company. So it was 100%.
This is all bootstrapping, right?
Bootstrapping.
I love it. Mine's the same way. Mine was all bootstrapped as well. Okay, so now when you sold in 2022. From that, working for $8.75 an hour for Forever 21, working, during the day in your own business. What was your revenues when you sold?
It was kind of a project base, but on average, in the last 5 years, we had between 10 to 15 million on an annual basis revenue, right? So that was around our revenue at the time. But of course, you have sometimes these unicorn projects that the renovation, that they are like a double digit, just one single project.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So now, that business, very oftentimes in my businesses, I find out there's other opportunities to serve my customers. And I start out doing that kind of within my business as another service within my business. And then eventually, if it's really good, and I know it's a big problem we can solve for many, many customers, then we spin it out as a new company within our group of companies. I've done this probably 30 times in the last 40 years. Okay. And some of them worked out amazing. Okay. And I can tell you about those. It's fun. Some of them haven't worked out so well. But overall, especially in the last 10 years, we've got great traction understanding our customers, understanding business and starting a business much better, right? Understanding leverage and liabilities, okay, we're way better at this than we used to be. So I mean, the last 10 years, we're probably maybe 12 or 13, okay, on business success. So when I think about what you were doing with Media Vision, you saw other opportunities, right, to do something more. Is Kudo kind of an example of that?
Absolutely. So it was around 2016, and I say, okay, it's been an amazing journey for me over these almost two decades. But what if I build a product that is a lot easier to use and doesn't need all this infrastructure, all the logistics, all the initial investment, years of planning? But create the same experience. And how can we really grow the TAM, the total addressable market, by having just an easier product to use? So that kind of was the idea around Kudo, that initially we create pretty much a UN experience in the cloud. So for businesses to be able to communicate in different languages through a video platform that is purposely built for multilingual meetings. Then we build of course, to have those meetings, you really need to have qualified interpreters and bring them into the meeting. So one of the challenges with finding and sourcing these interpreters and bringing them, they're like simultaneous interpreters. As you speak, they go into different languages live. So they're very unique expertise that they bring to the table, but they're all kind of a different languages, different subject matter experts. Mm-hmm. So we create over 3 years, the think about the Airbnb of professional interpreters. So we built kind of the largest marketplace of professional interpreters on the supply side, where we can integrate to our own meeting software and also all the other video and event platforms. So think about Gary's podcast to be multilingual, global. So we can really schedule this through Kudo so people, they can listen to our conversations in Spanish, in Chinese, in French, so on and so forth. And think about how quickly we can reach a much wider audience. So that was kind of the idea. I put together 12 slides of this idea, just because I've been in this space for a long time, like 12 slides, and I started looking for somebody who can build it for me. Yes, I did my undergrad and grad as an engineer, but I never worked as an engineer. I never code myself, right? And for me, this was quite a new area. It was software, right? So I really wanted a partner to build this solution for me. So I started like reaching out to my network, mainly from my friends in California, in Northern California, where I spend most of my time there, found the right person and started building the platform. And so Kudo was set up January of 2017. I have two co-founders, Arham, who's my CTO, and Evandro, who is my language officer. So one is focusing on interpretation, one is focusing on technology. So we started the company, right?
So you have a chief language officer?
Yes. Yes.
That's a different one, right?
I've never heard of
CFO before.
Yes. Yes. He was at the UN at the time, and he was a client earlier in my career in through Media Visions. I met him as a client earlier on, and basically when I wanted to start the company, I poached him and asked him whether he's interested to join this journey, and of course he came on board, and he pretty much build the community of interpreters, kind of set this up as far as the whole, think about, you have like almost 12,000 people on your supply side. So, my other co-founder, Parham, he basically built a product. Think about Kudo as like four leg stool, right? One is the customer side, one is the technology side, one is the interpreter side, and the other one is pretty much the product. So this is like how we can really work as a one ecosystem, right? And that kind of has been our journey for the last 6 years. It's a brand new experience for me. We grew the business. We had the first year product market fit. We hit to 1 million revenue on the first year when we launched the product. We had Mark Zuckerberg using our product on the first year, speaking 15 languages on a big conference. We had Andy, the CEO of Amazon, using our product at reInvent in Las Vegas in front of 50,000 people, speaking four languages using our product. And of course, then COVID happened. COVID happened, and we went from a team of 14 people to a team of 100 people in less than 8 months, right? So, and basically we start really expanding our infrastructure, our offering, our clientele. A lot of learning of going through this process as a remote first company.
Wow, that'd be incredible. Okay, so when I think about, we have one business, the technology company that I told you about, that's expanding nationally and globally fast. I mean, we've taken on our first partner only because one of our big customers, the world's biggest industrial building owner, is Prologis. Great people that I've known since for a long, since they pretty much within 5 or 6 years of them starting the company, the owner of Prologis, I got to know who they were and become very good friends and a very good customers and a relationship we had. Either way, this company became one of our first targets to experiment and pilot this technology we're using. And they love it. They love what we're doing with, really assessing the condition of pavements and roofs all over the country and all over the world using drones and artificial intelligence. So Prologis, was very interested in partnering with us, and they're taking on some interest in this business. But, we were only in the U.S. up until last year, and Prologis has properties all over the world. So they want us to go on other markets, and the EU is where we're focused right now. But, we've not really thought about marketing this business to the rest of the, building owners in the world. But your product can enable our sales team to actually do that, right? I mean, if we wanted to go and talk to, CBRE of wherever, Japan and their office in China and wherever else in the world, right? We could use your products probably to do that, right?
That's right. So we have, as of today, about 375 enterprise customers that are using Kudo for many use cases, but mainly around sales enablement, learning and development, product launches, customers interview, like when they want to get customers feedback, when they want to enable their partners with training, onboarding. Also, a lot of town hall meeting that is happening with companies that they have 10,000 plus employees distributed, and they want to have an inclusive and accessible experience for their team members. So traditionally for US-based businesses, it's been always like, let's capture the US market as much as we can. Usually that takes 5 to 10 years to become, as you said, 1% of a successful companies in the market. And then let's think about how we can now go global, right? This has its advantage. There's a lot of learning about fine tuning, reiterating your product for that specific market. But at the same time, the cost of localizing, adjusting your product to other market down the line is a lot more expensive than doing it from early on. So our hypothesis at Kudo is we want to make sure when you are building a product, building a service, you're thinking globally from early on. Not necessarily you need to have a global footprint, but be able to capture that information early on to build something that is going to have the right use case for market. This would really help businesses to be recession-proof for specific geopolitical reason, for the wave of how economy changes from region to region and what it takes. So if you look at the market dynamics between America, Europe, and APAC, there is always a 6 months kind of a lag between those major changes. And this could be a great advantage for businesses to create a full cycle of making sure that business is always relative. They bring the profitable revenue from, if not in the US for any reason, from Europe. If not for the Europe, now the cycle back to APAC, right? So this way, we see that growth opportunity is going to be more sustainable.
So Fardad, give me a summary of what it looks like. Let's just say that again, I do have customers with parts of their business all over the world. Some of my biggest customers, my biggest retailers, some of my biggest industrial building owners and stuff. And, we've not really, we've only gone stretched in other parts of the world where we've been asked to, not aggressively, assertively selling to them, right? And so let's just say that, you know, I said, I want, you know, Prologis, I want you to get, you know, all, every leader of every country for facilities on a, you know, half a 30 minute call or whatever, just to show them what we can do for you in your business. To go through the kind of a sum and summarize what we would ask of Kudo to do for us and how that would look.
Okay. So by the way, it's always great that customers are taking you to a new region, to a new territory, to a new country, because they're probably financing some of that, expense that you need.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Now, going back to your question, to go to a new market, there's a lot of things that need to be in place, right? Your content, your website, the languages of your message, the product itself, right? Depending whether it's a software product, hardware product, is it a service, your documentation, collateral? Our expertise at Kudo is live communication. When you want to do a 30-minute product launch, when you want to do a 30-minute due diligence with a potential partner, review financials, review deck, ask questions about their experience about your product. So you can use our platform. You can add our platform to your existing video communication platform, such as Zoom, Teams, you name it. You can use our marketplace with professional human interpreters. But also we have a brand new game changer addition to our product, which is our speech-to-speech AI, which we launched beginning of this month and is publicly available. And it's available for people to use it for free up to 40 minutes of a call. So you can actually go to our website and book a session for tomorrow, 9 a.m. East Coast, to talk to your partner in Brazil about a solution in English and Brazilian Portuguese, and people that would be able to follow that conversation through audio as well as live captioning on the video.
Wow, that's something. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And what's that product called again, Ardad?
Yeah. It's called Kudo AI.
It's Kudo AI.
Yeah, speech to speech translation.
That's cool. And then so you can use for 40 minutes, and after that, you cut them off.
You got to pay, man.
The clock starts ticking then, huh?
Yeah. We're launching this freemium for 1 month. Really wanted people to experience it. We have it now, 8 source languages to 30 target languages. And there are some amazing features, such as, you know, choosing the voice. We're going to add voice cloning as well. So let's say Gary is going to sound like Gary in Brazilian Portuguese, right? And be able to have a transcription of the call after the call. So you can have the summary of the call in Portuguese as well at the end of the call. So for people who missed it, they can review that. Yeah.
How many languages do you have right now for that?
We have 30 languages as of today. We're adding about 2-3 languages every month.
I mean, how many languages are there that take up, let's say, 95% of all the languages? If you said you want to capture 95% of the whatever 4 billion people on Earth, whatever it is, right? How many languages are there?
I think we already capture more than the population, because we start our language priorities. Of course, we follow some of our customers' needs. For example, we're expediting Ukrainian now because of just a great thing to do. But we're prioritizing G20 countries as our first source languages. So that was kind of our initial thought. So we have Hindi, Chinese, Japanese, Korean. We have Greek, Turkish as well, Hebrew as well. So these are like languages we added, but you know, most European languages already there.
So when I was in India for about a month and a half, okay, a few years ago. and I met a lot of people. And there's many different languages in India. But is there a certain Hindu language that kind of covers the basis of them, or what?
Yeah. We now only have supporting Hindi, right, as of today. But yes, you're right. There are different dialects, but Hindi is really the key language in India. Between Hindi and Chinese, Mandarin, you pretty much cover almost, and Spanish, you cover a large population.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so where do you see that? I mean, I can envision a lot of things when I'm talking to you about where this can go. It's crazy growth potential. When you look at, you know, AI and the multitude of opportunity at AI in your industry, I mean, in my industry, it's amazing, right? In your industry, I think even more so. Where do you see it going? What's a couple of things you envision?
Yeah.
5 years from now or 10 years from now that Kudo could be doing for their customers that nobody does today?
Yeah. So what we're doing today is already very unique, which is a human-like voice or speech-to-speech, almost real-time translation. There's a lot of opportunities to grow. So we're now just talking about meetings and businesses and events, right? There's a lot of opportunity around communication, support, tourism, hospitality, travel, right? The challenging part about AI, Gary, is there's a lot of information out there and it's coming from all over the place. And also, people, they're having a hard time to see, oh, this is another Web3, NFT, crypto, another technological, theatrical show, or this is real, right? So the people are just trying to figure out, right? So, and there's a lot of noise around AI. There are few AI solutions that are actually products and people are using, and the willingness to pay is there. And we're one of them. And how we can differentiate ours versus everything that is out there as far as noise, that is the challenging part, I have to say. As far as opportunity is limitless, as far as the opportunity of really creating a tool for people to understand and be understood, no matter where they communicate, who they communicate to, this is what really keeping us on our toes and very excited.
I see Kudo being with me in my trip to India next time, or wherever I go, right? Brazil or wherever, being with me while I talk. My voice is coming out somehow, right? With the translation that's needed, right? That's what I see as a future. I mean, is that what you're thinking too?
Yes.
That'd be amazing, right? And think how it frees up your people are, they are challenged to travel because of the language barrier, probably more than anything else. So think about what you do to tourism, right? When you can produce a product where Kudo, you know, I'm talking to you right now and you're hearing me exactly in that language that you're used to, right? That would be amazing. That changes the world.
Yeah, we all limited to what we can say when we speak a second language, right? Versus what we really want to. And when you have a tool that really help you to communicate in your own native language, that's magical.
Yeah. So, and you started out with the Security Council, right? I mean, I look at everything as, you know, what are we doing to make an impact in this world, right? You started with, you know, as a young guy, you're like, gosh, the Security Council seems to control everything, right? How do I help? How do we make it? Well, guess what? Think about the wars that have been created because of misunderstanding of language, misunderstanding of tone of language, even, right? You know, what does this do to hopefully create a world that's a lot more peaceful, right? My hope and my prayer would be for that. that your product actually does that. I know that one-on-one, if I could go to a country in India, or like India, where again, I was there and there's so many different languages, and I could speak, you know, let's say four or five different languages that kind of cover the gamut, right? Man, I would have met a lot more people, I created a lot of friends there while I was there. I mean, really very innovative people in Bangalore, India, where I was at, right? But how many more people do you meet, and how much more do you understand their culture, right? When you can communicate with them 100%, big, big difference, right? So it's really the difference you can make in society will be incredible.
Yeah. So we have, I'm just going to share a story of one of our clients using Kuto for health education in some remote islands in Hawaii, right? So we're talking about languages that are like 10,000 people globally speak, and how they wanted to educate them about pandemic, COVID, and so on. So you have those use cases that really, really feel what you're doing is really good. And then at the same time, you have like the Ukrainian president showing up in a European institution using our product and addressing the Council of Europe with 600 members speaking Ukrainians. They all follow in 8 languages. So again, the diversity of the use cases and these connections that are being built is really exciting for us and for everybody at Kuto. At the same time, I think globally, when you think about businesses, when they communicate globally, they bring opportunities. Language brings opportunity, right? Language brings communication, opportunity, and opportunity is growth for everybody. So that's how we look at it.
I love it. Yeah, there's so many opportunities. So when you mentioned, human-like voices almost real time. What's almost real time right now, and where is it going in 5 years?
Yeah, so right now our lag, of course, it's improving. We are now at version 2. Is about 3 to 5 seconds lag between the source and destination. Of course, depending on the language and the length of the sentence. So some languages how it's structured, it's different. Human interpretation also, there is a lag. What we build, we're really mimicking some of that experience of speeding up the delivery into the second language, depending on how the sentences are structured. We see, of course, this is becoming more and more real time, right? More and more real time, instant.
Sure. Okay. What are you guys in your business with? What type of core values did you kind of grow up with, and what core values do you have within your business today that you really inspire your teammates to live by, so that you have a culture where you know it's going to be continuing growing, safe for people and all those things.
Yeah. So overall, is integrity is really important for us. Like we want to be very transparent, really treat our customers, treat our partners, treat our vendors, treat our employees the same way that we want to be treated, right? So that's kind of a part of our values. Like as far as our values in Kuto, we have three core values: inclusion, productivity, and growth. And that sits. I'm very proud to say that as a tech software company, we have about a very good balance of diversity in our team from all across different regions. We have probably more than 45% women in the company. We speak overall 19 different languages as our first languages in the company. We are a remote first company, which has its own challenges, but we really rely on communication, effective communication, both synchronous and asynchronous, as far as our the way to overcome the challenge of being a remote working in a different time zones. And I could tell you a lot about, you know, our challenges and our opportunities to be a remote company working in different time zones. And then, of course, growth is for us the key. Growth as far as when it comes to learning, development, customer acquisitions, product development. So we want to always grow in everything that we do. One of the areas that we do this as a kind of a always having this looking at productivity as part of our business review. So we want to make sure whatever we build as far as processes and structure, we review this once in a while, make sure it still makes sense, it's still the right way. Speed for us is very important, whether it's speed to market, speed in market, or speed to value. So how quickly we can bring value to our customers as soon as we have the contract so they can see the result of their investment. Of course, speed in the market is also very important because especially these days, everything changes very quickly and we need to constantly adjust and adopt our strategy.
In your business, I mean, I feel like in every business, the time you work with your customer based on feedback, right? The feedback loop, right, is important. And I never realized how important it was until building technology companies where you rely on that feedback loop to really continue to learn from your customer, their customer experience. And with that communication, the customer will, you know, we feel like the customer really falls in love with your product much faster if you're helping them understand it and then constantly improving it for their best interest, right? Tell me about that with you guys, the feedback loop and what that means to you and where you know, a lot of your innovation may have come from while you're you know, really interacting with that customer.
Yeah. So I have a calendar, booking calendar link that I circulate with all of our customers, our client success team, called Coffee with our CEO. I schedule meetings, sometimes 60 meetings a quarter with our customers, 60 plus customers a quarter. And it's all about learning. Those are the most valuable meetings that I participated. I share with them what's ahead of us, but mainly about their experiences, whether they're new with Kudo or they've been with us for quite a long time, asking experiences that they had, feedback, how can we get better, and trying to really bring that feedback to our product engineering. Some of them are really how they do business with us, what are the pain points that they see, our terms and conditions. And I try to do this basically in parallel with what's already implemented as our client management team and their monthly meetings. Because whenever I meet with a customer, having CEO spending time with the customer brings a different perspective to the customer as well. So I can ask different sets of questions in addition to the questions that already our client manager asked. So we also bring different perspective back to our businesses, product and engineering, and our roadmap. Of course, it needs investment. It needs quite a lot of investment to do this. You know, I love customers that they're really helping us to learn about the new use cases they have, about the new pain points they have. I always ask questions but also I try to see how they use the product. I also learned to accept that not necessarily everything I hear during these calls is the reality. So I try to be more curious and ask follow-up questions and really see what they actually mean when they share a feedback. And so I go a bit deeper, I become even more curious when they bring a feedback to me.
Do you feel like you kind of have to understand the personality of the customer too? Because some customers are non-confrontational, right? And others will tell you everything that you don't want to hear because they're very bold and they maybe truly want you to do better, or they just like to be a little mean, right? I mean, either way, you have all these different personalities, and sometimes customer loves you and yet they don't want to hurt your feelings because they're very compassionate, right? So those customers, you probably have to ask different questions to and dig a little deeper maybe, right?
Yeah. Over all these kind of two decades, for me, customers that I have the best relationship with are the customers that we're both learning from one another. You know, it's not a one-way channel, right? So we learn a lot from them, and they learn a lot about from us as far as beyond the product, beyond the service. It's like how we can really co-create something, how we can become productive together, right? So again, when it comes to learning, if we are successful in adding some learning point to a customer and vice versa, I think that relationship is very, very sustainable and long term.
Sure. No, I mean, and again, I feel like you know, your best customers are usually those that are gonna be honest with you. And like you're saying, there's more than just that customer relationship. You probably are friends because you've created an element of trust where you're talking about other things too, and you're willing to help them with other problems or challenges outside your own control, your own business, even, right? That's when relationships are really built. But when I think about this, I've not heard this before, that somebody said you're talking basically almost one every working day that you have a call on average. If it's 60 a quarter, that's, you know, 90 days, right? That's 6 out of 9 days that you're probably having one of those conversations on average, right? That's pretty impressive, because, and I think that's a great thing for anybody to take away, because it's not that difficult. You know, you're having a conversation once in a while, a tough challenge will come up, or they're going to tell you that you suck in some way, right? It'll hurt for a minute or two. But then, you know, then get off your high horse and then figure out the problem and understand why they think you suck, right? So I think it's awesome that you do that. A lot of people are afraid to do that, and it takes courage and leadership to do it. And then bring those challenges back to your team, right? That's why you're going to keep growing. That's awesome. Chris, what we do also, Farday, as we go back, and I want Chris to kind of take notes of things that he thinks are invaluable lessons to an entrepreneur that he's learned. We'll finish up with that. And if you got anything else that you want to add, that's great. But Chris, what have you come up with so far that you like, that you think you are take home value and lessons for success and for our listeners?
Oh yeah, no, I got a ton. Farda, thank you so much for sharing your time. You are truly an inspiration. We've had very successful folks who, you know, came to this country from another country, but I think your story is maybe the most inspiring story like that I've heard so far. So my first major takeaway from everything you shared, Farhad, was while working for Forever 21, making $8.25 an hour, in the time between shifts, you can build a
Hey, wait a minute. It was $8.75. Don't undercut it.
$8.75. You can build a business that eventually reaches a 50% market share working at Forever 21. That's incredible. You can build a business that can then fund your other businesses and learn all of your lessons while building that business. And then while running your core business, always keep your eyes open for other business opportunities. And my last one, if we improve interlanguage communication, imagine the growth, the global growth we can achieve. Fardad, I did have one quick question for you. If you're cool with that. So we talked about it briefly, but I just wanted to kind of dig a little deeper. So how did you know you wanted to be an entrepreneur? How did you know you had what it takes? And how did you know the U.S. was the place to do it?
I didn't know.
Yeah.
It was not a moment that I said, I want to be an entrepreneur. If it was, I don't remember when it was, right? Yeah. But I can tell you, I like really what really drives me every day is to build something that whether it's we're talking about business, right? So, and I'm not a CUDA, of course, is what I'm very excited about. I'm advising and investing. I have investment in about 20 plus other startups as well. I'm advising 4 other startups as well. This is like a really exciting for me to share what I learned, the mistakes I made with like a first time founders, and this. Really, I kind of a mentorship. It's very interesting mentorship. I learn more when I share my lessons learned with others, probably than the other person, because it's kind of a reminder for me as well. Because sometimes you forget some of those mistakes. You tend to kind of a get again. Think about, you know, we are always very optimistic as entrepreneurs, right? We're always pushing for the best and hoping for the best. But when it comes to like thinking thoroughly, we need to be more realistic, right? We need to be always okay with delivering the first version of the product later than what we originally thought, hitting the first milestone on the revenue probably later than what we really planned for. So of course, sometimes you get lucky with external forces such as, you know, pandemic, that everything accelerated as far as your business plans. I think being an entrepreneur is not for everybody, and I don't recommend that everybody should be an entrepreneur. Everybody should think like an entrepreneur, hopefully for most of the time. But there is always a loneliness at some point when you're an entrepreneur, when you're up there. So sorry for a very lengthy response.
that was great.
Oh, Chris. Chris, what I see is, you know, I caught a bunch of different things here. I mean, when you think about your upbringing, Fardad, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, you're living 6 years old in your teens while the Iraq war is going on, your father's at war. You know, the grit that I think was really built in you allows you really to get through a lot of tough times in life, especially financially and even relationally, in my opinion. You're more bulletproof than many that haven't had the tougher upbringing like that. You know, we love rags to riches stories. I mean, I believe that America is the place of opportunity, that I want to continue to help be that place. And I worry some days that maybe it won't be 20 years from now, that this American dream won't be as easy or to accomplish for my grandkids and their kids, right? So, I mean, I want to fight for that the rest of my life. But when I hear, you know, your rags to riches story, you're only in America, rags to riches story, because you had that work ethic, that grit, and all the things it took, the ambition. I heard a lot of assertiveness out of you, you know, out of you. Assertiveness is something that, you know, not everybody has. You've had it all your life, and you're going to have it the rest of your life. And it's going to create, you know, opportunity for success as long as you want. When I think about your slogan, kind of the Airbnb of interpreters, right? Professional interpreters. I see it as that. And I would love to explore what we could do in our business with you to grow across the globe and with some of the services we provide. And I think any business out there striving to grow through all these communication barriers would look at your model as something, or your product as something that would make it way easier than they would think otherwise. When I think about your vision of making a difference, right, and your vision your thoughts about the Security Council back as a young man, and actually making an impact through better communication there. That's amazing. That's really cool that you kind of thought about that, and you've been part of that in your life now. So you're a blessing to this country and entrepreneurs everywhere. And we're really happy to have your story on today, Fardad, because we want more of you in this country so we can continue to be the greatest country in the world. It takes entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs like you mentoring the new entrepreneurs, so we can make sure we can be the strongest country in the world when it comes to, you know, the opportunities that we were able to be part of in this country. So great meeting you and hanging out with you today. Really appreciate you and everything you do. So
thank you both. Have an awesome rest of the day.
Until next time, we're out at Ditch Digger CEO. Thanks, Fardad. Thank you.
If you enjoy this show, please share with anyone else you think will find value here. And please go to our website, ditchdiggerceo.com, for show notes, links, video clips, and more nuggets of entrepreneurial wisdom. Don't forget to follow me on social media at ditchdiggerceo.
Paper routes, mowing lawns, careless hands. Daddy had 6 kids to raise. Factory and night. Not the words you said. Watched his every move and followed his footsteps. Pick and shovel in these two hands.
To the
soup where a CEO I stand. Already had nothing at all. Fearless of losing it all. Ditch Digger CEO. Watch them as they left the university. At 24, I was on my way. A wife and son with bills to pay. 30 years later in all 50 states. All eyes on us for the best in the game. Much older now, all the lessons I learned. Success is not given, hard work is earned.